Yes. Hi, everybody. Good afternoon. It is, I feel I should know this, Friday, the 14th of March, 2024. And as you can see, I've done a tiny bit of work on the background, but I'm not. See, I like the background stuff, but the problem is, shiver fingers. But the problem is, of course, that I can't use the high quality direct recording because the background doesn't show up for the camera, only for the processing. But anyway, it's nice, right? Love the new graphics. Thanks. So, first question, let's jump straight in. First question is, what motivates spray paint vandalism and graffiti? I live in Berlin. There's hardly a flat surface not covered in it. So, the general motivation for this kind of stuff is people who feel invisible need to leave a mark. They need to mark their territory. So people who society doesn't see, who are ignored, those people are not feeling visible, and so they feel the need to make an impression. So imagine if you were a ghost and you wanted people's attention, you'd have to rattle some chains or, I don't know, pass through people and make them feel chilly and cold or something like that, right? So if you feel invisible, then you feel the need to make your mark, and graffiti is one way of doing that. New novel is not, I have yet to start for a variety of reasons. I need at least 4 to 6 weeks of relatively uninterrupted time, and various things have interrupted, some of which are chosen and wanted, some of which are not. So I have yet to start. I'm ready to roll. The outline is ready to roll, but has not happened, right? So. Just while I wait for your questions and comments, I will tell you the stuff that has been on my mind as a whole. So, young men are giving up on sex to play video games, study finds. Researchers used regressive analysis to try to understand why today's youngsters are spurning casual encounters. You know, this is one of the great tragedies of the world and will be studied for thousands of years to come, which is the society that treats women the best lasts the shortest. That women seem kind of hell-bent on destroying the very society that has given them the most rights and privileges. It is a great mystery. I generally tend to be quite grateful for good fortune that comes my way. But it does seem to be the case that women as a whole, when men give them more privileges, they tend to view men with greater contempt. So, for instance, if you look at cultures that are not overly friendly to female equality, such as Islam and so on, well, the women seem quite keen on Islam as a whole, and not so much on white Western European or European Christians who have moved heaven and earth, not just to give women equality, but to give women particular privileges. And when I receive a benefit, I tend to be very grateful. freedomain.com/donate to help out the show. I don't understand this, and maybe people can help me out with this. I get some sort of evolutionary stuff about this, but for me, I really genuinely don't understand why women, when you give them equality, and in fact, bend over backwards, try and give them more privileges, why women then spurn the majority of men, attack the patriarchy, largely imaginary though it is, with even more ferocity, and simply refuse to have children. Like, they literally will breed to extinction the society that treats them the best. They will not have children. This is very sad to me. I know some people are angry about it, and I'm not saying that this is some big, you know, terrible thing or whatever. I just think it's really sad. Because this is women's one chance to show the world how equality is wonderful for society, and privilege even. I think it's the privilege that's causing the real problem. But women have finally, you know, they've said they've wanted this sort of equality and privilege for thousands of years off and on, and they finally get it. They finally get everything that they say they want, and then they just turn around, scorn and attack men, sleep around, and take from the general tax coffers outrageous amounts of money, and then don't have children. And of course, I have a daughter, and of course, I want her to have equality, as I want people as a whole to have equality before the law. And my concern is that for the next 10,000 years, people are going to look back and say, oh, no, no, we tried that. No, no, we tried that. We absolutely tried that, and it doesn't work. I don't understand it. I don't understand why there's not more gratitude, appreciation, and positivity and anything like that when you give women even more than the first round of feminists asked for. You give them more and more and more, and you get treated worse and worse and worse, and the birth rate collapses. So, it's a mystery. I'm not sure I need to understand it, but I'm telling you, I don't understand it. Why you wouldn't be like, wow, this is fantastic. Why do the demands escalate? Why does the more that men bend over backwards to give women more than what they asked for, why it is that the women who are treated the best, that the men who treat women the best are scorned, attacked, and disparaged the most. But I don't follow it. I don't understand it. And I'm just going to tell you that it is probably is never going to happen again. Which I feel quite sad about that as a whole. I do feel quite sad about that. That forever and ever, amen. And unless this is somehow understood, right? But forever and ever, amen. If women lose their rights, and of course, you know, if some European country falls to Sharia, then women are going to lose their rights. And then forever and ever, ever and ever, amen. People are going to say, well, we should give women more rights, and we should, and then people will look back, and I think it's very, again, it's genuinely sad about it, that people are going to say, no, 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 we tried that. It's terrible. It doesn't work. It's bad as a whole. So what can I tell you? I mean, the only thing I could probably say is that power corrupts, and it's not that women have been given equality. That's great. Equality before the law is great. It's just that women have been given crazy unjust privileges was the result of rights without responsibilities. And I would imagine that it has something to do with women get unjust privileges through the redistributive power and control of the state, and that causes significant corruption and hostility towards everybody who exploits others has to dehumanize those others. And again, I don't, or maybe it's because women weren't evolved to have this kind of power and privilege in society, and maybe it doesn't particularly work for them. Maybe it's the redistributive aspect of it that mistakes that women made are patched up and shored up by the redistributive power of the state, largely from men. And I don't, it's very sad. It's very sad that this is going to be the lesson that people get out of this. And women are, I'm very, very concerned that women as a whole are kind of sealing their fate. And the next time that equality or privilege is suggested, people would be like, oh God, no, we did that and look what happened, right? I don't know. But it's very, I mean, I feel honestly quite heartbroken about that. I feel quite heartbroken about that. And it feels impossible to change or reverse, if that makes sense. So, and, you know, I try not to be upset about reality, because I'm not a leftist, right? So I try not to be upset about reality, but this reality is upsetting. It is upsetting. Somebody says, perhaps they have too much free time to think about what they could have because they didn't have to think, where will I find food and shelter? Instead of figuring out, how do I get my man to want to spend resources on me? Too much freedom from reality. Maybe. I mean, it's funny because certainly in relationships, I treat my wife wonderfully. She treats me wonderfully. And I treat my daughter wonderfully. She treats me wonderfully. So obviously, this is not somehow endemic to all women, but I think with political power, women are the new aristocracy, and aristocracy tend to be cold-hearted, contemptuous, and self-destructive. Whew. Yeah, I don't know. But it's honestly, I try not to think about it too much because it really just breaks my heart.
There's
this Gen Z girl. She says, you know, like I had a party phase, I had a hoe phase, I hooked up with a lot of people, so maybe that means men and women. And now she says, I'm done with that, I'm through with that. Now you gotta wine and dine me and treat me like the princess that I am, and nobody's stepping up to do that. And she's yelling at people and yelling at the camera and doing this like in your face hand gesture stuff that is just wild. And I think maybe it's just too much power. Maybe it's just too much power to have youth, beauty, fertility, desirability, sexiness, and government power, and a voting bloc, and like maybe it's just too much power, and it just makes people crazy. But yeah, it's really quite hard to understand for me why women aren't saying, "Oh, guys, the men have given us everything we wanted and more." The guys have given us everything. We're like, can't we show some gratitude? Can't we, you know? I don't know. Like, I saw this thing on Women's Day or whatever it was. Like, we had to fight for our rights. I was like, no, you didn't. No, there was no revolution. There was no civil war. There was no women in the streets with weapons. And, right, you didn't fight for your rights. You nagged and complained and asked and demanded. And that's fine. And then the moment it became really feasible to give women equality and then privilege, men did so. Because, you know, we want to please women. We love to please women. And the problem is, the way that it works for men, I don't know if you've had this. This is sort of in a sort of personal level. So this is not some big, oh, thank you for the tip. I appreciate that. So this is something that happens with men, I think, as a whole. Maybe you've had different experiences. But what happens is a man will work hard to try and please a woman. She says, I want X, Y, and Z. And then the man will work really hard to try and please the woman. She says, jump. He says, how high? Yes, you want this, you want that, you want the other. I will go and I will work very hard to get to these great things for you. And he does that on the belief that she says what she wants, she's unhappy because she doesn't have it, he gives her what she wants, and then she should be happy. Right? Right? I mean, if I say I want a piece of cheesecake for dessert, and then the waitress brings me a piece of cheesecake, I say thank you, and I eat my cheesecake with happiness, and now I am satisfied because I wanted cheesecake for dessert. I got my cheesecake, I ate my cheesecake, it was good, so I'm happy, right? I don't want to oversimplify things, and maybe this is just a bit of a male thing, right? And so men will bend over backwards to try to make women happy. And I've certainly had this in relationships, like in romantic relationships, and even not just romantic relationships, but personal relationships with women, where I work hard to try and make the women happy. You know, maybe you're just like my mother. She's never satisfied. And then you realize that you can't make her happy. And the general response for men, when you work very hard to try and make a woman happy or women happy, and you realize that they just the goalposts keep moving, the standards keep moving, and they're just never happy, is fuck this, I'm out. Fuck this, I'm out. Wild. And I've had this in relationships where you try to make the woman happy. You change a lot of growth, a lot of change, a lot of improvement, blah, 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 blah. Well, I want you to do the dishes more. Okay, I'll do the dishes more. Well, you're not doing the dishes right. Well, I want to do the dishes my way. This is the way I like to do it. Well, you're not stacking them the right way. And like, it's just pointless. Like you just, no matter what you do, you're in the wrong. And then you realize that the woman wants to complain and has no interest in having anything solved. Because whenever you solve the problem, the complaints just shift to something else. And then for me, it's not even like, I'm so mad. It's just like, forget it. I used to have this occasionally in the business world. A customer would say, I'm unhappy with this, right? And you'd solve that and say, well, but now there's this. And eventually you're just like, okay, this customer, I can't please this customer. So we're just not going to do business together anymore. You may have this in a restaurant. You run a restaurant. I would have this as a waiter sometimes, right? Some customer would complain about this, complain about that. You try and solve this, that, and the other. And then they would just keep complaining. And then eventually you're just like, I can't solve it. I can't solve this. So I actually had managers who would ban people from the restaurant because they just were never happy, always complaining, always sending food back. It was never right. It was never this. It's like, look, if we don't make the food you like, you've got to go to a different restaurant. But they didn't want to go to a different restaurant because they just wanted to complain. You know, like people who complain about their health, but then overeat and don't exercise. And complain about their health and overeat and don't exercise. So, yeah, so it's just that female dissatisfaction is a huge amount of power, right? As a man, I can't imagine what it's like to express discontent and have everyone rush to solve my problem. Can you imagine? Have you ever had this as a man? You express discontent, you're unhappy about something, and everyone leaps into action to make sure you're happy and to solve your problems and to make sure you're content. As a man, that shit does not happen. It doesn't happen at all. It doesn't happen. But women complain, and I can't conceive of having that kind of power. I can't imagine what it's like to have that kind of power in society, that you as a man are unhappy and everyone runs around like chickens with their heads cut off, trying to find a way to make you happy. We men do not experience that. I mean, maybe, you know, one in a zillion super handsome men, I don't know, whatever, right? Super wealthy men or whatever, but you know, but that's the common thing among women. I experience it at an individual level. But for most of the women that I've known, you say you're unhappy, you just get this blank-eyed stare. Like, their unhappiness is your problem. Coincidentally, your unhappiness is also your problem. Right? So their unhappiness is because you did something wrong. Your unhappiness is because you did something wrong. So their unhappiness is because society is not delivering something just and necessary to their tender sensibilities, but your unhappiness is because, well, you just can't be satisfied and you've got to learn how to make do with less and you've got to learn to be happy in your own skin. And right. So if you're unhappy, it's because you're immature and unwise. If they're unhappy, it's because you're doing something wrong. So when men as a whole, when we figure out that certain women, it's not, again, not all women, right? When we figure out that there are certain women whose discontent is a power play to make us dance monkey dance, and they express discontent in order to have power over us, to make us do stuff, to do the dance monkey dance stuff, right? Then we realize that their discontent is not an invitation for solving a problem, because men are problem solvers. That's why we have a civilization. Men are problem solvers. So if a woman complains about something, we assume that she wants a solution. But when we realize that she's complaining about stuff in order to control us, to make us do stuff, to keep us off balance, to keep us to as a power play, as a superiority play. Because the master, it matters to the slave if the master is unhappy. It does not matter to the master if the slave is unhappy. So focusing on the other person's unhappiness is a hierarchical power play, right? If the cop is mad at you, that matters. If you're mad at the cop, it doesn't really matter, right? Because all criminals would be mad at cops, right? So when men begin to suspect that women's discontentedness is simply a power play to establish dominance, power, and control, then men bail out of the game. I mean, sane men, right? Men, if they have the option, right? They bail out of the game, right? You know, like if you have a mother and she's just discontented with everything you do, you try to please her, she's still discontented. You try to appease her, she's still discontented. And then eventually you're just like, okay, so she just is discontented because it's a powerful thing for her. Because she likes to watch people jump around and dance around and try and make her happy. Right? The way to care is if you're happy, in a sort of power analysis, right? The way to care is if you're happy, you don't particularly care if the waiter's happy, right? Because the tip goes one way, right? You care more if your boss is happy than your boss cares if you're happy. The director of the movie cares more if the star is happy than if an extra is happy. Right? If the star says, I can't work like this, I'll be in my trailer, get my agent on the phone, I can't, and storms off the set, then the producer or the director or both are in trouble. However, if an extra says, I can't work like this, and storms off, who cares? So hit me with a why, if you're a man or a woman, if this resonates with you. All right. I should be able to type the right letter there. But yeah, does this sort of resonate with you, that there are some women who use their discontentedness as a form of power or dominance play? To express that they have power over you, they're more important than you and higher up in the hierarchy. Look at all my macho statements with my daughter's little kitty cup. It's the same thing with teachers, right? You care more that if the teacher is angry at you, you care more about that than the teacher does if you're angry at the teacher. Who gets to be angry and discontented is a power play. It is a mark of power. And so women have been given almost infinitely more than the original feminists could have possibly dreamed of. Just so you understand, I used to make this case about Marxism, right? Marxism said, well, we need to transfer money to the poor so they're not poor anymore. But the money that is transferred to the poor now is hundreds of times bigger than the entire world economy when Marxism was first created, like in the mid-19th century, right? So the money that's transferred to the poor is hundreds of times bigger than the entire world economy when Marxism was created. So if feminists, the early, you know, Mary Shelley, Wollstonecraft, Vindication of the Rights of Women, like 19th century feminists, were to look forward in time and see what had been achieved for women, they would say, holy crap, that's almost infinitely more than we could possibly have dreamed of. Because there's some stuff that they couldn't have dreamed of, for instance, all of the labor-saving devices, right? And as the old saying goes, I think this comes off Honey Badger Radio, but men invented labor-saving devices for women before they invented life-saving devices for men. In other words, they invented things like washing machines and refrigerators and so on before they even put air filters in coal mines, because they just so much wanted women to be happy. So the early feminists just wanted bank accounts and, you know, the ability to sign contracts and go into debt and all of that, right? And some access to some workplace and so on, right? And now women are the majority of the voters. They have old age pensions that outrageously benefit them compared to men. They have the welfare state that outrageously benefits them compared to the men. They have massive astroturfed, quote, careers called HR and DEI, equity hiring, and all kinds of quota systems. And they have heavily subsidized education, and they have abortion on demand, and they have free healthcare in most of the West, or subsidized healthcare if they're poor, everywhere. And so, and that they're the vast majority of women in universities, and there are professions where women are overwhelmingly represented, and all of that. So there's infinitely more than the original feminists could possibly have imagined could be achieved. Right? I mean, women can get, can send their laundry out to be done and get groceries delivered to their house, right? So what has been achieved is, and I'm not kidding about this, it's infinitely more than first wave feminists could have conceived of, or even second wave feminists. So they would say, well, gee, we only aimed for this, we got infinitely higher. Therefore, women must be massively happy, if not downright grateful. However, of course, as women's, quote, equality has gone up and up and up, and women's overrepresentation in various fields and resources and environments has gone up and up and up, women have become progressively more unhappy. Women are less happy now than the beginning of feminism. So clearly, we can't please. I mean, the West has gone trillions of dollars into debt, tens of trillions of dollars into debt, largely to please women. Right? Oh, and women are still exempt from the draft. And women are still, the vast majority of women want, you know, air-conditioned jobs that don't disturb their nails. Comfortable travel and so then we went to the rooftop cafe and got a latte, right? My daughter did a very funny impersonation of these do-nothing pretend workers in social media who do these day in the life of product manager, right? So women are more unhappy, more discontented, more hostile to men, more aggressive, more contemptuous of men, after 150 years of men doing just about everything they could. The West has gone into debt, tens of trillions of dollars, has sold off the future of their society for the sake of trying to please women in the present, and women have responded with increasing contempt, promiscuity, and childlessness. Which means that trying to please women just kind of destroys the society. And of course, this is the story of Adam and Eve, right? They're trying to please Eve. Kicked them out of paradise. Chris says, obtaining the unearned typically results in less satisfaction and happiness. Yeah, why don't fourth wave feminists want equality in septic work, bricklaying, engineering, electric work, plumbing? Yeah, for sure. For sure. I mean, I worked with some women up north, but guess who had to carry the heavy stuff? So. I mean, privileged women, which is to say most women in the West, live better than kings, male kings, when feminism started. They live better. They have access to more medicine, more labor-saving devices, cleaner water, cleaner conditions as a whole, air conditioning, right? So the women of today have almost infinitely better lives and more comfort than the most aggressive Genghis-style type patriarch when feminism started, right? And they're unhappy. Now, I don't blame women for this foundationally. Of course, I blame people's belief in the state. So, using the state to appease women's unhappiness is generally a civilizational ending trend. I mean, there might be virtually no Japanese people in 100 or 200 years if this continues, right? So, it's very sad. Because once men realize, and they will probably, and sadly, like hopefully without the state, right? Without the state, that's fine, right? But as long as the state is around, women, you know, there's a documentary. It's a pretty raunchy documentary. It's a mockumentary. It's a pretend documentary by Rob Reiner called Spinal Tap, about a fictional heavy metal band. And sort of Yoko Ono style, one of the girlfriends of the band members becomes the manager of the band, and things just go to hell. And then finally the male manager comes back. It wasn't a glove they wanted to put on the album cover, I assure you. And the guy finally comes back and puts the girlfriend in her place, and then has like a cricket bat that he looks at her meaningfully and all of that. So, yeah. Women will not be happy with appeasement. I mean, they just won't. They won't be happy with unjust privilege. They won't be happy with the unearned. They won't be happy with debt. They won't be happy with astroturf pretend education and careers and all of this. They just won't be happy. And once men realize that, everybody will be a lot healthier. Everybody will be a lot healthier when men finally begin to realize that it's about power. It's not about discontent. The discontent is the avenue to power. It is not about getting the problem solved. It's about domination and control. Right? Like the abusive man. We understand this with abusive men, right? So the abusive men in society, like if a woman is married to an abusive husband, he's going to have all of these standards, and he's going to beat her up for not meeting, oh, my food is cold, or you didn't take the garbage out the right way, or there's a cup on the counter, or whatever, you left the garage door open. He's like, so, but all of these quote standards are just as an excuse to beat her up, right? We understand that, right? She can't please him, right? She can't please him. She can only please him by failing his standards so that he can abuse her, because he's kind of sadistic, right? It's the same kind of thing. All right. Let's get to your other comments. A couple of tips would not go amiss. Bit of a low tip show. Not the end of the world, but I would mightily appreciate it. Surely would. Did you ever hear the story? I've never seen the movie Deliverance, but I know it's a brutal tale about the South, of full of rape and so on. And I don't know if you ever know the backstory. The backstory is the guy, it was obviously an urban, sophisticated writer. His car broke down and a bunch of, quote, rednecks came and helped him with his car, helped him tow it to a gas station, and were perfectly polite. But he was like, well, what if they just raped me? And so it was the exact opposite of what happened, right? All right. Dr. Peterson, I assume that's of the Jordan kind and not the Jesse Lee kind. Dr. Peterson pointed out that in politics, when politicians say they want outcome A but get result B, then they propose continuing doing the same thing to get A but still get B, but refuse to ever change what they do. Maybe we have to consider they're lying about wanting A and really want B. Does it not seem more plausible? Well, I mean, the purpose of a system is what it consistently achieves. The purpose of feminism is female unhappiness. Right? So you can't change female nature by changing female conditions. Changing the environment does not change nature. If it did, communism could work. So human beings are designed to operate as all animals are, but we can do it consciously. Human beings are designed to operate on the principle of profit, even at the calorie level. If we don't take in more calories than we expend, or at least the same amount, we starve to death over time. So all human beings live off profit. But then saying, well, we can have a society where nobody cares about profit is saying, well, if we change the environment, then we change human nature, which is sort of like saying, if we hold a human being underwater, he'll grow gills right away and not need his lungs. Right? This changing the environment does not change the biology or human nature. Women with hypergamy, women want to, thank you, Jimmy, women want to marry up, right? Women want to marry up. And I talked about this with Janet Heimlich, daughter of the Heimlich Maneuver guy, many years ago on the show. I don't know, 12, 14 years ago or something like that. I talked about this with Janet Heimlich, and she was pointing out that as women become more educated, they still want to at least as educated a man or a more educated man, right? And if you talk to women, you know, they got a master's degree and you say, well, would you date a guy with just a high school education, right? Well, they say, no, it's got a, if I have a master's, I want a guy with at least a master's degree. And if a woman makes $100,000 and you say, will you date a man making $40,000? No, God, no, it's got to at least make what I make. Now, if income and education was a true meritocracy, in other words, if it wasn't astroturfed by government regulations and laws and lawsuits, then I think it's less than 10% of men get a postgraduate degree. So if it was a raw meritocracy, given that there are fewer women at the higher IQ spectrum, you'd have like, I don't know, 8% of men getting a graduate degree, and then there'd be 4% of women getting a graduate degree. So there'd still be twice as many men as women with graduate degrees. But if you are astroturfing a bunch of women to get these semi-fake degrees with massive amounts of debt, then maybe you have 15% of women and 8% of men getting graduate degrees. I mean, these numbers could be different in various places, but certainly as astroturfed, in which case then you have a lot of women chasing a small amount of men. Because women want to marry up and date up. And the way that it used to work is women would have to choose a man in their late teens, early 20s, and they would then have to work with that man so that he could achieve as much as he could, right? To support him, to encourage him, to whatever, right? And that's how she would get her pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. But now, women can, if they're dating late 20s, early 30s, mid 30s, women can already see how successful the man is. So a successful man who's reasonably good looking is like a rock star in his 30s. And women are always going to want to mate and date up. And so the more you raise women's fortunes, the fewer men they have to choose from. The more higher you raise women's fortunes, and especially if you raise them artificially, you're just having them be perpetually dissatisfied with the men that they have available. So it's very sad. It's very sad. Okay, so it's fine for the top 5 or 10% of men, but even then it's bad for them because they can't settle down either because they have too many options, right? All right, hey, is it okay to change your mind in regards to an agreement with your kids? My 17-year-old daughter is enrolled to do a short course to which I say I'd pay for $1,800. Later thinking about it, I said to my daughter, instead of me paying the whole amount, I'd like you to chip in a couple hundred bucks. My reasoning is I wanted her to have skin in the game. Thoughts? Sorry, isn't free will predicated on your ability to change your mind? So I'm not sure why you wouldn't. Now, it's one thing if she has budgeted for it, she's halfway through the course, then it probably is a little bit late to change. But if the course hasn't even started yet, certainly if she's 17, if it is a short course, which I assume is going to have some value for her, then expecting her to pay a little bit is probably very reasonable. Should be very reasonable. And yeah, you're perfectly free to change your mind. But the important question is, why did you want to pay all of it to begin with? Right? That's a very interesting question. I don't know the answer to that. Why did you want to pay the whole thing to begin with? Is it because you think she's younger than she is? Is it because you're afraid she'd be upset with you if you don't? Is it because you want to be still the big patriarchal dad who pays for stuff? What was the reason why you did that? That's the interesting question, right? That's the interesting question. All right. Thank you, Boomega, for tipping. Thank you, Jimmy, for tipping. I appreciate that. Thank you for the tip. Edward says, I feel like Bitcoin is going to really help create a much more healthy dynamic between men and women by ending the corrupting role of the state, by taking away the safety net of the money printer. Yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah, women are going to have to make better decisions when they have to rely on themselves or men rather than selling off. I mean, one of the reasons why women don't want to have kids is because they view the next generation as guilt-inducing because they feel bad about all the debt. All right. Hey, Steph. Sorry the tips have been low lately. Like many of us, money is tight for me now, and I'm not willing to give up much. But soon I'll be giving more as I obtained a higher salary recently. Well, congratulations. I appreciate that. Thank you. Thank you very much. Hey, Dylan. Hello, Dylan. To help her out, to give her a boost. The $1,800? Okay. Does it help your almost adult daughter for you to pay for everything? Does it help her? Now, giving someone a boost is not paying for the whole thing. That's subsidizing everything. So if you say, to help her out, I must pay for everything, even though she's almost an adult. Thank you, Matthew. So does it make sense for you to pay? Does it help her out for you to pay for everything? I don't think it does. Because as you say, she has no skin in the game, right? She has no skin in the game if you're paying for everything. So to help her out, to give her a boost, that's just generic stuff, right? So do you help a child out who's almost an adult by paying for everything that she wants that's not a necessity, right? I get you don't charge your 17-year-olds for food or whatever it is, right? But if my daughter wants something that is not essential, then this happened very early, and she talked about this in the show we just did together. So I'll just keep it brief here. But I didn't want when she wanted something that was not essential when she was younger, right? She wanted some toy when she already had a bunch of toys or something like that, and that's fine. And I would say, okay, I'll pay half. And then suddenly she was like, ooh, now I've got a cost benefit, right? Because I wanted her to be in the situation of making her own decisions about buying things. I didn't want her to be in the situation where, in order to get things, she whined, complained, and moaned, and begged. And like, I didn't want her to be viewing manipulation as a resource acquisition strategy. I wanted her to be able to make the decision for herself, how she allocates her resources, right? So we gave her a little bit of allowance for doing her chores, and she could choose to spend that on whatever she wanted. I might give her some feedback. I remember once we were with some friends at Niagara Falls, and she bought some a toy that was supposed to be this cool thing that scampered around, and it turned out you just had to pull it, and it was really lame. But we'd already opened it, and the store said no refunds. And I did point out, I said, listen, if you buy this, it's fine. I don't think it's going to be that great, but listen, you're free to buy it. It's your money. And then she was really, really upset that she spent her money on something that was bad. And of course, you know, as a father, I'm like, oh, I want to make her upset go away. But it's like, no, she's got to learn that lesson. And she's been a great saver ever since. So, I mean, it does not help her. Free domain. Are there options to purchase physical copies of your books? I'd love to support by buying. Yeah, freedomain.com/books. Just go there. used to go there. At least I think that there's still physical copies. You know what? Before being utterly glib, the website has gone through a whole bunch of changes and upgrades. So let me just double check. Let me go to one of these, one of the older books. All right. Maybe. Let's see here. Yeah. You can buy them. Yeah. Yes. I am not drunk or on drugs. At least not today. No, there are physical copies. There be physical copies. When you go to the book buying place, just there's different formats and versions, and just look at that. My bicep is causing the background to bleed over. All right. It's not really a bicep. It's more of a monocep. I do not gather muscles the same way that I gather wisdom. All right. So here is something interesting. So there's a study just came out a couple of weeks ago. Generosity functions as an antidepressant. Depressed people were randomly assigned to give less than a penny a day to charity. Over the next 2 months, moods improved and depression declined. The more they gave, the better they felt. Even small acts of kindness elevate mental health. So here's the abstract. Pro-social interventions grounded in social interactions have shown limited effectiveness in alleviating depressive symptoms, possibly because of the discomfort and unease that depressed individuals experience during such interactions. We developed and examined an innovative pro-social intervention, an online micro-charitable giving intervention, in which individuals voluntarily donated at least one Chinese cent, about 0.0014 of a dollar, daily. We conducted three pre-registered 2 month randomized controlled trials with depressed individuals. Results showed that compared with the waitlist group, the intervention group exhibited significantly greater improvements in both depressive symptoms and emotional positivity. Minus 0.19 to minus 0.46. Emotional positivity went DS 0.22 to 0.49. Big improvement, right? More than double. And that emotional positivity mediated the intervention's effect on the reduction of depressive symptoms. Exploratory analysis found a slightly larger intervention effect for generous donors than for minimal donors. This low-cost, easily accessible pro-social intervention holds potential for the prevention of depression. Now, doesn't that blow your mind? Just a little bit. I hate to be Smuggins. I really do. My daughter will kill me. But there's the link. Does that not blow your mind a little that even tiny acts of generosity have significant effects in lifting depression? See, as I've sort of talked about for many years, the best way out of unhappiness, I'm not obviously going to use clinical terms because I'm not a clinician in any way, shape, or form, but the most reliable and fastest way out of unhappiness is generosity. I mean, when I ask you to donate, I'm just offering you the chance to be happy. I mean, that's kind of true. And this is science. So generosity breaks the black pill of depression in some way. I mean, I think there's ways to sort of figure it out. And again, I'm no psychologist, so this is just amateur musings and ramblings not to be taken particularly seriously. But even a little bit of generosity says, okay, the world is something to be generous for. I'm going to be generous because that's a benevolent and positive attitude. I'm going to help other people. I'm going to do good things in the world, and you feel happier yourself. And so one of the problems, I think, with depression is the self-absorption and the selfishness. I'm depressed. I'm unhappy. You grab at resources. You grab at happiness. You can pull other people down. Whereas if you break that cycle by being generous towards others, then you can be quite happy. Because a lot of people will say to me, Steph, how do you stay? I mean, get this question every couple of shows. How do you stay positive? How do you stay optimistic? How do you stay happy? How do you stay happy? Well, I'm pretty generous and do a lot of good in the world. I mean, some of it in the show, some of it sort of private, but I'm pretty generous and do a lot of good in the world. I mean, People can talk to me for hours for free. No commercials, right? I put out my shows for free. My books are all free. You can get them for free with the exception of Art of the Argument, artoftheargument.com. But yeah, so you can get my novels, books, nonfiction shows, no ads, free. It's pretty generous. And it good for philosophy, good for the world, and maketh me happy, right? So if you're unhappy, try to feel or try to figure out where you can be generous. If you're unhappy, try to figure out where you can be generous. Now, if you're around a bunch of exploitive people, then generosity is going to be used to tear you in two and exploit you and hollow you out and so on, right? But generosity, and I've made this case before, but I haven't made it for a while, so here we go again. Generosity is a great filter mechanism. In my dating, business, personal life, I've always had, since my early 20s, the same rule. Treat other people the best you can the first time you meet them. After that, treat them as they treat you. So when I meet people, I'm generous. You could say to a fault, but it's not a fault, because I get to then find out if I'm generous back. One of the ways I got out of a lengthy relationship without much of a future was I was very generous to the woman, and then I asked for reciprocity, didn't get it, and I was out. Done. Gone. Done. So on dates, yes, I will pay the first date. I will pay the first date. I'm not going to do something super expensive, but I will pay for the first date. And then I'll see, when I was single, I would see if the woman would be interested in reciprocity. Now, the reciprocity didn't necessarily mean she had to pay for the second date, but, you know, maybe she could make me dinner or something like that, right? So I find if I'm generous with people and then I'm observant as to the reciprocity, things go well. Things go well. Be generous and then be firm. Right? Be generous and then be firm with a lack of reciprocity. And the moment I met a woman who was as generous to me as I was to her, I married her within 11 months. All right. My father went half on my first car. I was working. The rule at my parents was I could live there as long as I was either in school or working and saving. Freeloading was never an option. I think it's reasonable. Do, 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 do. All right. Somebody on Rumble is posting odd word salads, right? That makes sense to me. I've experienced it. For example, even listening to someone beyond my perspective has this effect. Genuinely, to understand their perspective, I felt better. Well, I mean, this is one of the problems, not with you, but with left and right, the left and right spectrum of politics. It has been repeatedly shown, in fact, it's one of the most robust findings, and it's very consistent, that people who are conservatives understand the liberal viewpoint. They don't agree with it, but they can argue it, they can steelman it, they understand the liberal or the left viewpoint. However, the people on the left genuinely cannot comprehend viewpoints different from their own, right? You've experienced this, right? Where somebody on the right can listen to somebody on the left and say, I respectfully disagree, like the Charlie Kirk stuff, right? I disagree, and here's why, and so on. Whereas people on the left, you either agree with them or you're a Nazi. Like, they cannot, and I think it's really deep down at a brain level, they cannot empathize with or understand opposite arguments. And that, to me, is one of the big markers of whether somebody has empathy. And this is why they're so bad at relationships, right? Because they have to be in an echo chamber or they're surrounded by Nazis. There's nothing else. You have to completely agree with them, even when they change their minds, or you're just an evil hater or whatever, right? So somebody says, I think depression is a symptom of living a lie. Cognitive dissonance, stress, in a way. Well, I hear what you're saying, and I mean, I'm sure there's some vague truth in what you're saying, but you have to be specific. There are lots of people who live lies who aren't depressed, right? There are lots of people who are living lies who aren't depressed. So you've got to be more specific. To me, I think depression is the exhaustion that comes from being exploited, particularly as a child, right? If you have to manage your parents' emotions or keep propping them up or manage their anger or appease them in some way or listen to their rambles when you feel uncomfortable. So if you've been exploited, you get worn out, you get depleted. And I think depression has a lot to do with that, which is why generosity, right? When you're exploited, you tend to close up and you tend to hoard. If people keep stealing your crops or people keep stealing your grain, you put higher fences and stronger locks around, right? You tend to hoard when you're being exploited. But generosity is a signal to your system that you're no longer in a state of being exploited. Let's see. Other questions, comments, issues? Happy to hear. Ah, yes. the incessant and vaguely interesting debate. And again, freedomain.com/donate to help out the show. The incessant and only vaguely interesting women in their 30s calling men who want to date younger women creepy and half pedophiles and all of this kind of stuff, right? That is straight up, absolutely straight up intersexual competition. That's all it is. Because of course, when those women were younger, they generally didn't mind going out with an older guy, who, especially if he would pay for stuff, because then they get to boast on social media, right? Social media is demonic in that way, in that it fuels the sin of pride and vanity to staggering levels not seen since the Garden of Eden. And so when women are younger, they don't mind dating an older guy with money. But then when those women get older and they want access to the high quality men, but the high quality men want younger women, then they're like, oh, that's gross. You're half a pedophile. Why would you at the age of 35 want to date a 22-year-old woman? I find that such a bizarre question. Such a bizarre question. So dating is about having children. I don't mean to shock everyone, but the reason we have hyper-compatible naughty bits is because rubbing them together makes children. It is the fire that brings a spark of life to human consciousness. So that which serves fertility is, and serves the raising of children is the good. And so a man who's older, who has resources, he has an excess of resources, and a younger woman who has an excess of fertility are a good match. But all the women have been taught the lie that love and romance, it's about soulmate and my person and compatibility and having your best friend around and having someone to travel with and someone to confide in. That's crap. It's gay crap, honestly. I mean, it's ridiculous. The purpose of love, romance, and sex is the having and raising of children and nothing else. Nothing else. Nothing else. That's why we have it. And that's why we have the oxytocin and the dopamine and the bonding chemicals. And that's why sex and orgasm feel so good. And we tend to bond with those. If we're remotely healthy, we tend to bond with those we have sex with. That's all for the having and raising of children. That's what it's all about. Because if we don't have and raise children, we have nothing. We have nothing. We don't even exist. So an older man with resources dating a younger woman who's fertile and also, of course, has more of a capacity to pair bond, right? She has more of a capacity to pair bond if she's not had a whole bunch of different sexual partners. She's also, she doesn't have the genetic infusion from other men's semen. She doesn't have an STD, probably. She hasn't gone through an abortion. Like, it's just better, right? It's, I hate to use this analogy, but it's sort of like, Why is it that wealthy guys don't buy cars that have had five previous owners? Because you can afford a new car. I mean, I don't know why this is so complicated. I don't know why this is so complicated. I mean, I get why that they want, well, I'm just going to shame you into dating me. Oh, it's so strange to me. Why is it that wealthy guys would not buy lower quality used goods? Why? This makes, I mean, why would that, why would that even be a question? Why would wealthy guys want young, unspoiled, pair-bonded, hyper-fertile women who have youth, beauty, fertility, and the capacity to openly love, who haven't had their hearts broken a bunch of times, who haven't been run through more times than a fencing dummy? Like, why? Well, of course, that's why men work. That's why men work. We work to afford. We work and save in order to demonstrate our value to fertile women. And the more fertile the women, the better. We are displaying our resources in return for access to fertile women. That's what we do. That's how we roll. That's why we have upper body strength and this ability to hyperfocus and this crazy work ethic that men have and all of that. We're doing it to show excess resources to fertile women. And the more fertile the woman, the more valuable our resources are. Because also, if a man wants a couple of like more than one or two kids, a woman who's in her mid-late 30s is very unlikely to provide him more than one or two kids. And even that's going to be a dice roll. And that might be 15 grand worth of IVF and things like that too. So we want a young, fertile woman just in case we want four or five or six children. It's not complicated. It's not complicated. I don't know. It's just, you have to work really hard to not understand this stuff as a whole. Like the women who want, like they're single moms and they want a successful man to to marry them. I'm sorry. I mean, it's tragic. I get all of that. But, you know, women have said that they want to be equal to men. So I'm going to give them moral agency equal to men. Right, because that's what they want, equality. So I'm going to do that. So, yeah, why would a man work super hard to gain excess resources to pour them into most likely a lower quality man's child? Because this is a man who didn't stick around. I'm not talking about a widow. Widow's different from a single mother. Single mother is a woman who has a choice out of who she has children with. She has children with a guy, either he's a bad guy who leaves or he's a decent guy that she drives away. Why would a man work super hard in order to pour his resources into another man's child? That's like a woman getting a second job so that her husband can have a nicer hotel room to meet with his mistress. I don't understand this. Boy, the amount of work you have to do to not understand this basic stuff is just very funny. Somebody says, and again, freedomain.com/donate to help out the show. Low donation show, but I know we're a little early or whatever. If you're hearing this later, I'd appreciate it. Somebody says, my sister has three dogs, a fiance, and no kids. She told me a month ago their relationship is at a breaking point. I think she's living a lie, and she's self-medicating her depression. They've been together for 10-plus years. Now, I know that there's people who can't have kids, and I understand all of that. I sympathize with that as a whole. But I'm not particularly interested in relationships with people who don't have children or who choose not to have children. Let's just say that, right? I'm not particularly interested in relationships like, oh, they've been together for 10 years and they never got married. They don't have any kids. I don't care. I don't care. It's sort of like going to a road designer and saying, well, you know, you've got to build the road so that bicyclists can use it. You've got to really care about the bicycle. It's like, I know that there are bike lanes and all that kind of crap, but you know, before all of that, the road designers were like, no, I'm building the road for cars. I mean, I guess people on bikes can use it, but I'm building the road for cars. I'm really not going to take much into account of the bicyclists, right? And marriage is for the having and raising of children. And people who live together and don't have children, I don't particularly care about their relationship. Because it's not real in the way that, it's sort of like, you care, can you imagine a movie where you're watching a high stakes poker game and you think there's millions of dollars on the table, and it turns out it's just, you know, a bunch of teenagers who are playing for nothing, right? Then the stakes are just enormously lower, right? It's not a real game, right? I mean, if somebody's gambling their money in the stock market, that's one thing. If somebody's gambling their money on a made-up pretend stock market, then it's not really that important, right? Doesn't really matter. Not that important. Doesn't matter. So what do I, I just can't get interested in, we've been together 10 years. We don't have any kids. It's like, stay together, break up. You have no part of the future. Thank you, Matt. I mean, you have no part of the future. You're not going to be around. Everything's going to die with you. You have no part of the future. I mean, if I was a coach, and how much investment would I put into somebody I knew was only going to show up for a couple of coaching sessions and then quit, right? Now, I want, you know, if I'm a coach and I want my athlete to do well, somebody who's going to commit for years is somebody I want to commit to and want to invest in. But if you knew ahead of time, oh, this person's going to come for a couple of sessions and then they're just going to flake out and quit, right? Would you be particularly interested, or would you particularly care about them as the recipient of your coaching? No. After 10 years, what are they waiting for that is going to change for the better?
Yeah.
And the number of people that I've known over the years who get to 5 years and then break up, it's legion. It's very common if they don't have kids. Because your body's like, okay, so clearly, if you're with a woman for 5 years and you don't have kids, then your body deep down, your lizard brain says, oh, she's infertile. So we got to move on, right? We got to detach from this person, and you wake up, you're just out of love like that, right? Because remember, all of this romantic love, sexual love, is to do with the having and raising of children. And so if your body deep down, your lizard brain is like, well, it's been 5 years, we don't have any kids yet, so she's infertile, we got to fall out of love with her, and we got to go fall in love with someone who's going to give us kids. So all relationships as a whole, where there are no children, and it's a choice, right? It's a choice. All relationships where there's no children, the couple generally falls out of love and it fades out. And it's 5 to 10 years or whatever, usually around 5 years. You can drag it out for longer if you want, but at some point, right? At some point, your genes are just like, nope, we're not here for sex. We're not here for fun. We're not here for companionship. We're here to make babies. We're here to make babies. Because all of your genes that didn't care about making babies didn't survive and didn't flourish. So in a relationship, again, talking about younger people, there's a choice. You aim for babies or you break up over time. Now, of course, everyone can say, I know a couple too. Yeah, talk in general. Live on Friday afternoon. Very cool. Yes, it is. Yeah, Larry King married younger, had children with all his wives, yeah. And Anthony Quinn had a kid, as did Mick Jagger, and a kid much later, 70s, 80s, whatever, right? I'm not saying that's ideal, right? You should try to have kids younger as a man because your sperm quality deteriorates over time. She is my sister, though. I tried getting her to do a call-in show, and I even offered to call in with her. Nope. Why are you so invested in your sister's love life? I don't quite understand. I'm obviously not insinuating anything bad. I'm just, how old are you and how old is she? Fuhrer. My brother was once a dungeon master, and he came up with the great phrase. He wanted everything, all of the hints in his dungeon to rhyme. And one of the hints was, Don't be a fjord. Use the sword. Don't be a fjord. Use the sword. I'm 36. She's 33. Right. So she's almost certain to not have children, right? Because if she's 33, she's been in a 10-year relationship. And she's 33. Then it's going to take her years to get over this bad relationship. And then she's going to be too old to have kids. So it's very sad. It's very sad. I hope that you try to get her to, you know, crap or get off the pot, so to speak, right? I hope that you tried that. Thank you, Chris. I hope that, because it's the end of her bloodline, right? Either you have kids or are trying. Tulsi Gabbard tried, but her and her husband never did have kids. Even IVF failed. Sorry to hear about that. Yeah, for sure. Why wouldn't you have kids? They're so much fun and challenging and thought-provoking. Well, and you get to be generous. You get to be kind. You get to make somebody else happy rather than just self-obsessing about your own happiness all the time. And self-obsessing about your own happiness all the time is the surest path to misery. We are happy to the degree that we serve virtue. I'm pretty sure that sloppy rhyme is grounds for kicking the writer out of the game. Yes, that's right. I had a friend who was a great little artist, and he did lots of cartoons about our D&D sessions. I asked him some years ago if he ever had any of those still, because I'd love to see them again, but no. Yeah, and if you don't have kids, I mean, you can still, of course, be very productive to your gene pool just by pouring a lot of resources into nieces, nephews, and so on, right? All right. What else do we have? Dysfunctional families. This is from the narcissist box. But enough about my entry point to this world as a baby. Dysfunctional families resolve conflicts and problems by pretending they never happened. Dysfunctional families resolve conflicts and problems by pretending they never happened. All right? What am I referring to? Hint, it's not a family. What am I referring to? Bonus points to anyone who guesses this first. Why did I save that quote? And what am I referring to? Dysfunctional families resolve conflicts and problems by pretending they never happened. To what do I refer? Come on, it's not a long sentence. To what am I referring? Referring. COVID. Oh, beautiful, man. Brilliant. Well, is it? Or maybe it's just blindingly obvious. But yeah, you're in a dysfunctional relationship with society as a whole. Hit me with a why. If you have tried to have a direct and honest conversation with the branch COVIDians, the COVIDiots, the hypochondriacs masquerading as tyrannies, masquerading as thoughtful people, have you had any sort of direct conversations with those who swallowed the jagged little pill of totalitarianism? How did it go? Just out of curiosity. I haven't had those conversations because, I mean, everybody in my life refused the vaccine, right? For obvious reasons, everybody in my life refused the vaccine. So how did it go when you would have these conversations? Like, well, Was I right about some things? Was I right to be skeptical? Was there any value in me being skeptical? Right? What was that? There was some article that's like, well, if you're unvaccinated, it's time to prepare your end of life plan, right? I tried that with my wife's doctor when she was pregnant. She went bonkers in, on the spot. We dropped her. Yeah. Just wondering. Attempts, wouldn't call it a conversation. Well, it wasn't really a conversation. Not well in general, a few exceptions. Yeah. Do you think there's going to be any kind of reconciliation at all? Do you think there's going to be anything in the future? Yes, and it resulted in blackmail. They're not in my life. Another thing they would never. COVID broke my marriage. She is very happy getting her 8th booster. They would never apologize. Yeah. Well, even if it's not an apology, just some kind of acknowledgement that you were wrong. Oh, sorry, that you were right, that there was something that they said. I'm trying this thing. Eye contact redirects your gaze towards the camera. So even if I look down, it redirects my gaze towards the camera. I don't know if that's going to be weird or not, because I got to read these things, right? Maybe some pockets of reconciliation, but nothing large scale. No reconciliation. Do you not think that there might be a movie, or do you think you could even get that movie made, which was a movie about COVID and about the lies and about people's delusions and all of that? None of them would admit any error. Yeah. She has COVID right now. Still didn't see it. Yeah. It's wild. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I'm very glad that I don't have people in my life that I have to have this kind of truth and reconciliation stuff with. Somebody says, from what I see on Facebook from old friends and extended family, I don't think most COVIDians have been swayed. Well, yeah, but only decades from now, I think. Those movies already exist. They're just censored. No, I mean a mainstream general thing. Maybe governments will apologize in the next century. Hi, Stefan. Are there any ego deaths on your mind you can give us? I don't know what that means in particular, so perhaps you can give me some more details on that. Yeah, I mean, it won't do us much good in the next century. But I wonder. I'm always curious about how things go as a whole in society and whether people ever circle back and try and sort of figure things out. I'm always kind of curious about that. My wife's family are still drinking the COVID Kool-Aid. They live for it. And the latest government propaganda. The eye thing looks weird. Does it look a little weird? It probably does. That's why I didn't turn it on initially. I could turn it off. Redirects your gaze towards the camera. So if I never look down, it looks like it. Yeah, it looks like my eyes are kind of flipping all over the place, right? When I look down. Yeah, I think it's a bit more organic. It's probably better, I would imagine. A little organic, probably better. Better! It would be an interesting movie to make. Which is a documentary on, you know, just interviewing people. What happened with COVID? And do you think that you're still in the right? And do you think that the skeptics had any arguments that are all valuable or valid? It would be very interesting to make that kind of movie. Very volatile, though. And I think you'd get a lot of people just walking out. Here's an interesting science fact. The length of your DNA can stretch from the sun to Pluto and back 17 times. The human body contains about 37 trillion cells with 23 DNA molecules encased within each of them. So if you would uncoil all of the human cells and lay them out end to end, a row would reach up to 34 billion miles, right? So when I say you contain infinities, I'm not just talking about concepts. The sun to Pluto and back 17 times. That's the code to make you you. Isn't that wild? All double down, which is a bit scary to think about with respect to future instances of similar nature. Yeah, the fact that there's no reconciliation informs us the behavior will be repeated. Yeah, and I assume it's going to be certainly in the EU, it's going to be with CDBCs. Right? All right. Any other last questions, comments, donations? freedomain.com/donate, of course, if you're listening to this later. Gratefully, deeply, and humbly appreciate your lovely support, your very, very kind support. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And we're back regular Sunday morning time, 11 a.m. Eastern Standard, Sunday morning. All right, going once, going twice. Don't forget to check out freedomain.com/books for your free books. I really, really strongly recommend my novels. If you've not, like if you hear me do role plays and you think it's pretty good, The novels are fantastic. Freedomain.com/books and freedomain.com/donate. You can go to fdrurl.com/locals to subscribe and you get all of these great goodies. A minor apology. Well, two things. One person was saying, and I remember when I was talking about this, thinking, I can't quite be right. They're saying that gravity travels at the speed of light. So I said that when the moon, if gravity stopped working, the moon would break orbit. And I said immediately, but it would be a tiny bit after because the effects of gravity move at the speed of light, which makes sense. Nothing could be instantaneous. The speed of light is the maximum. So I wanted to give that correction. And for those of you who were accessing StephMott, I'm so sorry. There was a number of responses we saw where the bot was not responding in the right way. We're working on that and we're working to get that fixed. My apologies for that. And so on. Do you debate anymore? Yeah. Hey, man. Absolutely. Absolutely. If you want to debate me, freedomain.com/call. I mean, the call-ins don't just have to be about difficulties in your life. They can be about what you want to debate. So. Yeah, so we're getting this. The other bots are working fine, but the StephBot AI is having a bit of hiccups, and we're working on that. And my apologies for that, because it is a bonus that you get as donors, and we're working on fixing that. My apologies and all of that. All right. Quantum entanglement seems to operate instantaneously. Yes, I've certainly heard of that, and I will reserve that to the more scientifically and quantum mechanics literate among us. All right. Thanks, everyone, so much for a wonderful afternoon's chat of philosophy. Lots of love from up here, my friends. I'll talk to you Sunday morning. Thanks again.